Memorial Highway, I-84.
Oh, yeah.
Good afternoon. We'll open the House Committee on Veteran Services and Emergency Preparedness. I appreciate everybody being here today, obviously, Thursday, March 28th. Tomorrow's an in-district day for the representatives, so we look forward to having everybody have a safe travel home. But in the meantime, business will be conducted today in the building, and appreciate several folks coming to testify. We will start with, and we have several public hearings and possible work sessions with the intent to move some bills rather rapidly that don't have the opposition, so that we can keep the momentum forward and keep things moving. So with that, we'll open up our first public hearing on HCR 23. Ms. Edwards, if you will, and meanwhile, Representative Springer, if you'll come to the dais, and you brought along with you Lewis White, Frank Farmer, and Fred Schaefer. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Concurrent Resolution 23 honors the service and dedication of nearly 200,000 United States military service members who were exposed to unsafe levels of radiation from nuclear weapons testing between 1945 and 1962. There's a no revenue impact and no fiscal impact and no subsequent referral.
Thank you for that. And just so that everybody understands how we work, what we'd love to hear from you today, we got a lot of veterans testifying as well. So when you are testifying, if you could kind of give us a little bit of your background in terms of your branch of service and the years of service, we're just interested in knowing who's been serving us and want to thank you accordingly. So with that, Representative Springer, it's all yours. And please start by identifying yourself as you always will, and gentlemen will follow. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair and members of the committee. Sherry Springer, House District 17, and I'm frankly quite honored to bring this resolution to you today, and I know sometimes there's talk in the building of resolutions or merely statements, and resolutions are statements, but I think to start a conversation, we start with a statement. So let me tell you how this resolution came to me. These fine gentlemen here, they're a little bit of a scary group, aren't they? I'm fairly intimidated. I meet with these guys somewhat regularly at some of their meetings, and they had an atomic war veterans meeting. And most people say, what is that? And so I spoke at this particular group, and frankly, before I showed up to speak, I have to confess, I went and got on the internet and figured out what in the world they were and what they did and when they served. And I thought, I didn't know this. I consider myself to be somewhat savvy from a military family. I didn't know. So I went and I chatted with these guys, and it became very, very clear to me that very few people know what an atomic war vet was, including me a year ago. So let me give you just a little bit of background on this. You know, I remembered when I mentioned this, well, frankly, when I worked this bill in the building and I brought my bill back around, and many members, certainly not any of you, brought this bill around to be signed, and the first question people asked me, senators and state representatives, what's an atomic war vet and what war was that? Which is kind of an interesting question. And I said, remember the Cold War? I was a kid, and I remember we had bomb shelters and hard candy in basements, and we were afraid that the button was going to get pushed. That's what I remembered about it. So let me give you a little background here. The United States feared that tensions with the Soviet Union and its satellite states could potentially result in a nuclear war. The United States performed nuclear arms tests to ensure that if such a war did occur, they would be effective weapons. Because of these tests, the main health risks linked to the Cold War is nuclear exposure due to nuclear weapons testing. Veterans from this conflict are often referred to as atomic vets because of their exposure to atomic weapons and radiation. Just a little bit more here. Approximately 200,000 U.S. service personnel performed occupation duties in Hiroshima and Nagasaki following the atomic bombing of Japan, and similar number of service members participated in atmospheric nuclear weapons tests from 1945 to 1962. Exposure to radiation has been associated with a number of disorders, including leukemia, various cancers, and cataracts. And I've talked to many men that were stationed outside of buildings, and they didn't know what was in the building, but they were told to guard it, and they didn't even know. They didn't know what they were guarding, and they didn't know what they were exposed to. And, you know, that's just not something we think about in 2013, that you're guarding a building and you don't know what's in there, and, oh, by the way, what's in that building could cause very serious, if not fatal, consequences later. So I'm not going to read this resolution because all of you can read, but I want to tell you just a little bit of what it does because I think it's important. And I want to be very clear. These gentlemen here have great testimony, and so I don't want to take up too much more time. But this is the beginning of a conversation. There is now some work that is begun in the planning stages for an atomic war veterans memorial on the site of our local state facility here. And there's other things that we may be talking about later down the road. We got to start here so we all start at the same spot and know what it is we're talking about. So the United States government engaged in atmospheric and underwater nuclear weapons testing from July 16, 1945 to November 4, 1962. Again, exposing nearly 200,000 United States military service people of unsafe levels of radiation. Service members exposed to ionizing radiation due to participation in nuclear weapons testing became known as atomic veterans. Atomic veterans were unable to discuss the nuclear weapons tests until the tests were declassified many years ago, and I believe that was 1996. Whereas many atomic veterans were exposed without their knowledge, their consent, or any subsequent disclosure. I think it's just time for us as a state to recognize these people and to give them the respect that's due, and I know this committee is very understanding of that. And with that, I will conclude my testimony, and I will kick it off to Fred. You just slide that mic down there, Fred. You don't have to be real close to it.
Okay. My name is Fred Schaefer, and I was in the only branch, Navy, and we were down at Christmas Island, and that was in 1962. It was supposed to be the last above-ground testing for the U.S. of A. And as a 19-year-old, they ask, anybody want to watch these blasts go off? We're silver bullet. We're not going to be hurt. So I went up and I watched it. And it's a giant x-ray of the man standing in front of me. I saw his rib cage. You could see your bones in your hand if you picked them up. And they gave us glasses. A lot of the guys in the earlier just had to turn their backs to it. Had no protective gear. And we could watch the fish in the water jump ahead of the wake that was there from the sound wake and the wave of the blast. We could catch them, but we couldn't eat them because they were radioactive. We didn't have much more protection. We had t-shirts and dungarees. And we were there for 21 blasts. And they say we didn't get within 20 miles, but the one blast they told us we were the target ship, and it was a mile dead above us. And it was, at that time, it was bigger than what they had dropped in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Different types. We've got guys in our group. I'm the Oregon State Commander for the Atomic Veterans, and now we've included the Association of Nuclear Veterans, which are the new guys that are around nuclear equipment in Iraq, Afghanistan. And they just told us that this was, you know, no big deal. But everybody sort of wanted to see it. We've got guys that were in the airplanes, have to climb into the bomb to arm the bomb right next to the nuclear fusion and everything else, have to arm that within 5 to 10 minutes before they drop it. And when I first started this back in 1980, I became the state commander for National Association of American of Atomic Veterans. Nobody knew about it. We couldn't even talk about it until 96. And now we've got the door opened. 2005, we came to the legislature, and they gave us July 16th as Atomic Veterans Day, fifth state in the union to make an Atomic Veterans Day. And that was initiated on July 16th, 1944, when the first bomb was dropped in Alamogordo, New Mexico. So we've already been here. We're looking for more. It's just these guys, they couldn't even tell their wives that they participated. So it's been a stair-stepping. Most of them, you'll talk to them and they say, we can't talk about it. Even my wife don't know about it. I said, that's been removed. And then they can talk about it. So first of all, VA wouldn't even talk to us. They said, no way. Didn't happen. 96, they said, okay, now we can talk to you. So this is what we're after, just more recognition so people know who we are and that we were out there. And we were sort of the first line of defense in what's happening. No.
Thank you, sir. And what we'll do is we'll go through the panel, and then we'll open this up to the committee. So if we'll just kind of stay seated as we go through. Sir?
My name is Frank Farmer. I was at Aniwetok in 1958. I was in 18 chest, standing topside of the ship with a T-shirt and dungarees on. No, he was lucky. I didn't have any glasses. They told us to turn our back to the bomb, to the bomb site. When it went off, they told us to put our hands and arms over our eyes and close our eyes. And when it did, you could actually see the bones in your hands with your eyes shut and over your hands. As soon as the flash went by, they would tell us to turn around and look at the mushroom cloud. The mushroom cloud just kept getting bigger and bigger. It would go up as high as 34,000 feet. And as soon as you get turned around, then the shock wave would hit you and it would actually move you. It was that strong. One of ours was 156 kiloton blast, which is equal to that much in dynamite. So you can see how big it was. I did not know until 2004 that I could talk about it. I met Fred at the American Legion in Lebanon, and I got talking to him. I saw a poster he had up on the wall that says, "Wanted, Atomic Veterans." I said, "I think that's me." So I went and talked to him, and he said, "Yeah, they've released us from our secrecy oath, so we're allowed to get out as much as we can and get everybody onto it." And since that time, I became the Mid-Willamette Valley Area Commander under him, and it's been quite a chore getting out to more atomic veterans. They just don't know about it. I was never told until I met Fred that I could talk about it. Couldn't tell my wife, my mother, anyone. They told us at the time that we were going over to Aniwetok that if we discussed it with anyone, we would be tried for treason. And you know, when you're a young guy like that, you believe what they say. Mm-hmm. So it's been a godsend to me that I ran into Fred and got this out, and I'm now 40% disabled from things that happened there. And I am getting some help from the VA, and thank the Lord for Jim Willis. He is one of the best guys I've ever met. I do want to put that out there because he is quite a man. And we just keep trying to get more veterans that was in these atomic tests. And they carried on, like I say, from 41 up to 60-something. And the year I was there, I was in 18. They had 32 that year, but I was only there for half of them. So we appreciate anything we can get.
Well, thank you for your testimony, sir. And we share the same feelings for Jim Wells. He's done a wonderful job for Oregon's veterans, and he's earned his retirement, and we wish him well. And now his successor, Cameron Smith, is taking the reins and running.
We tried to get him retired, but he said no.
Yeah, he was ready.
He's a comic veteran also.
Yes, he is.
Sir?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Lewis White. Most people know me by Louie. First off, I want to thank Representative Springer for everything she does and has done for veterans. And thank you for the opportunity to be here today. I was a young lad off of a farm out in Crabtree when I got my greetings. And I'm sure you know where Crabtree is. It's just a mile down the road from the legendary Cottonwoods Ballroom. I served on board the aircraft carrier USS Kearsarge from 1965 to 69, and as part of my duties, I was part of the nuclear weapons loading team. Currently, I suffer no ill effects of anything because I don't know whether I actually handled a nuclear weapon. That was on a need-to-know basis, and at the time, we didn't need to know. Okay. What I'm here to talk about is, of course, the atomic veterans need to be recognized and the people need to understand what they are and who they are. My close personal experience, I have a couple of them I want to share. And a childhood friend that that I grew up with. He went through extensive treatment for multiple myeloma. And the VA, so far, doesn't recognize the fact that the man had anything to do with nuclear weapons. And if you know how to read a DD-214, this is about as plain as day, okay? At any rate, as a result of that, and Dick was a little over 6 foot tall, and I'm only about 5 foot six. Today, because of the results of that multiple myeloma, he and I are eyeball to eyeball. What I want to share, it's a little difficult, but in the last year or so, his daughter-in-law had a little baby girl removed from her because of medical consequences. And that little girl was 1 pound, 3 ounces when she was born. And Dick has a limitation of 10 pounds that he can pick up. Well, that little girl exceeds those 10 pounds now as a result of his experiences with nuclear weaponry. And this is in the early to mid-60s. He can't pick up his little granddaughter. So give that a little bit of thought. Those people need some recognition. And our oldest son served from 1981 to 1989 in the United States Navy. He was a nuclear electronics technician. And as a such, he ran a nuclear reactor on the USS Bainbridge, the first nuclear-powered guided missile cruiser. So it goes back to antique, per se, equipment. He has, within the last year, began to, and he's about 50 years old now, he has began to suffer some pretty strange medical problems. Related to this or not, I don't know. I know that a lot of people that served in the U.S. Navy at that time that did not run nuclear reactors don't have those kind of problems. So there's sometimes consequences there that we don't know about. But we need to be aware, and the public needs to be aware, of exactly what Representative Springer is bringing forth is so that the public knows what an atomic veteran is. Thank you.
Thank you. And gentlemen, thank you for your service as well. And we'll see where the committee takes us with the questions here. But your representative has certainly been in the building talking on your behalf, and I appreciate the work that she's done on this and being your voice in the building. So with that, Representative Esquivel.
I'm just curious. You're fine people because you're in the Navy. what were your rates and what you were on the Kearsarge, and I've seen the Bainbridge. What were your rates and what ships were you on when this happened?
I was a machinery repairman second class.
Okay.
And I was on the USS Hooper Island at the time of the test. Okay. Later I went to the USS Klondike, then I went to the USS Platt. That was a tanker.
I was Navy, and I was a fireman, and I was on the
floating... Don't they call those snipe?
I am a snipe. Beautiful.
Yes.
I enjoyed that.
Or you could call them a bilge rat.
But it was... We were on a floating service station. We refueled the ships at sea, which people can't believe.
Okay.
And we were out there refueling the ships going around... The tin cans or the destroyers were going around the circle keeping the Russians back, and they said it was a bottomless ocean and the Russians had an oiler anchored there, so they just pulled up to their ship and tied up and refueled, but it was anchored in a bottomless ocean. But we refueled underway.
I was a second-class aviation ordnanceman on board the aircraft carrier USS Kearsarge, which was our primary mission was anti-submarine warfare and search and rescue.
Were you an AX? You were an ordnance, though? You weren't AX?
AO, AO2.
AO, okay.
Airedale. I didn't need a fresh air chip.
Representative Witt?
Thank you.
I'm just wondering what your experience has been in terms of having either yourselves or knowledge of anyone else having medical conditions related to being an atomic veteran accepted or not by the U.S. government.
It's a fight. We got to get in to prove it, that first of all that you were there, and I guess I'm lucky because I'm getting a lot of the letters, a lot of the stories that some of these shipmates are telling me. I mean, I've got a list that goes up back, way back. And my uncle has he was going to college, and his wife was with the U.S. Forest Service out of California, and they took them to Nevada, where she participated in some of the first ones. She died of breast cancer, which was related to that. And I mean, it's just, it's still hard. The government does not really want to own up to that we're all that bad, but some of the guys are starting to get some of the benefits for what's happened to their families. And
go ahead, sir.
As far as my part is concerned, the first test I was at, I got tinnitus from the blasts and noise. I've been suffering with that even today. I'm wearing hearing aids now that I got from the VA. It helps on the tinnitus, but every once in a while, even while you guys are talking, every once in a while bells go off. Mm-hmm. And you just can't get rid of it. And I have at the time we were there, like Fred said, you could catch fish, but you couldn't eat them. You could also swim in the water. All this decontamination had to go somewhere from them clouds. It came right down in the lagoon, the Anahuac Lagoon, where we were anchored, and it settled right to the bottom. Well, I was diving, picking up shells, and I scratched my leg on coral. Less than a week later, my lower half of my body was covered with a rash. And I've been fighting, I still fight that today. Now they're calling it, what is it? No, it's not. It's more than an itch. I can't remember the name they call it, but they won't let me call it a rash.
Uh-huh.
They said there's no way that I could get a rash from what happened. Well, I don't know what was in that water, you know, with all that contamination. And I cut my leg on the coral where I was skin diving. And like I say, till this day, they're giving me medication for it. And it's a steroid type of medication, and I don't know what else it would be for. So, but that's I got 30% disability on that rash.
I've reiterated to you the experience of my friend Mr. Schmidt and the government's lack of acknowledgement of the obvious, and I don't know how much he has done on his end. I mean, you got to do your own part out here on this stuff. But this is directly related to this. And I have a brother who was in Vietnam during the same time. He was in country in the United States Navy in the Seabees. And today he is undergoing chemotherapy for multiple myeloma also. And he's in his mid-70s. Again, these things, they have a snowball effect, and there's some powers that be that are not accepting or acknowledging responsibility. We can't change the past. We can't change what's done. We're asking that they acknowledge this.
Thank you. Representative Parrish.
Well, first of all, thank you for your service. I appreciate it greatly. My question is about your children. So my husband was a Gulf War vet. We saw the soldiers return home from that war, where the children born to soldiers who were there with severe abnormalities and birth defects. And can you speak about any kind of experiences that you've had with your own children or people that you know anecdotally?
I have one granddaughter that is pretty well messed up. We don't know that it's what it was caused from, but I was there and exposed before I was married. So they've said that they think that this affects your genes down the line. And I believe that this is what it's from, but I can't prove it. So
we have one man in New Jersey that several years ago he started a program on bloodline of grandkids and children and stuff, and the government don't want to hear nothing about it, but he's still taking testimony and trying from his points of view back there to try to get some recognition, but he said nobody wants to listen to what he has to say. He's got records galore.
Wow. Thank you.
My oldest son, who was the correct electronic technician on the Bainbridge during the 80s, and you go through extensive years of, he was a first class petty officer before he ever hit the fleet. Unbelievable. But at any rate, his oldest son suffered from multiple myeloma. He's doing just fine today, but by the time he was diagnosed, it was stage 4, which is almost terminal. But connection, I don't know. But none of his other children have that problem. But Chris had Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Representative Witt.
Thank you again, Mr. Chairman. I think the year was 1996 when you said that you could actually come forward with your experiences. If you were to, if anyone, to the best of your knowledge, were to submit a medical claim prior to 1996 that could possibly be related to atomic weaponry explosions or whatnot, what would happen to those medical claims prior to 1996, and is it any different today?
Before 1996, it fell on deaf ears. There was no such thing. It was still top secret until it was declassified. The general that had sworn most of the troops into this secrecy clause was retiring, and he said, I want to release these boys from this clause. And then the VA says, hey, we're here. We can start helping you now. Come on in. And so, I mean, this is, before then, it just fell on deaf ears. You were threatened with treason if you tried to say anything about atomic bomb action, that you were there, whatever.
Thank you for that.
Thank you.
I did not know until 2004, because nobody told me that they released me from that oath. I had a couple guys say, well, they put it on TV. I said, they never put it on a TV that I saw. I never did hear about it until I got it from Fred.
Thank you. Any further questions from the committee? Representative Springer?
Mr. Chairman, if I may, please. These gentlemen didn't come to me to say, we're looking for medals or we're looking for something special. They came to me and said, would you help us get the word out so more of these atomic veterans could know, number one, that they can talk about this now, and number two, that they can be upfront with their medical records. That's really what they have been striving for. This wasn't about give us another medal, because you can tell there's great service here and these men love their country. And I've not heard regret from them. I've just heard an ask for acknowledgement and the complete veil of secrecy to be lifted from this.
I appreciate that, and I guess I'm glad to hear that the gag order's been lifted. It's unfortunate it took so long. And what you are asking is that's just to help you kind of raise and elevate this profile so that folks can start talking a little bit about this, and so there's not so much denial surrounding what you've gone through and what you continue to go through, and in some cases perhaps is extended into your family. I've just got to say how much I appreciate the service, and I'm sorry that that's been the situation. I will also say that in this committee, verbal sparring is always, you know, encouraged between the branches. You mentioned you're the only branch. The chair happens to be an Army veteran. I know we have some Army and some Marines out there too, so we don't do that.
To my fellow naval personnel, we have to teach them how to tell time.
Yeah. Right. But the, we'll see. There you go. But I will ask one question. I guess I'll ask it of you. You're the state commander. So since dedicating July 16th as Atomic Veterans Day, what is occurring throughout the state? I mean, I quickly Googled, not to be rude, but I just quickly Googled it, and I saw that Albany was having something in 2006, and it was kind of a big deal. Do those things continue today, and what's going on at a state level for Atomic Veterans Day?
Okay. I started several years ago having meetings. We were having some in Portland. They would have one in January, and then in the Mid-Willamette Valley, I would have one in February, and then we'd go for 3 months, and we'd do the same thing. And in Lebanon, I say, I've been doing it since before I was allowed to, so I started them about 1990. And even today, we get a little bit of news media, and we bring another one out of Lebanon. He says, I've been here all my life. I didn't even know you guys were doing this. Every time we have a meeting, there's somebody new. So, I mean, we are getting it, but it's slow. And news media just does not... We've had good responses from the news media, TV, and that's about as far as we really get.
Well, thank you for that. And sir, I'll just ask you and encourage you to, if you could send some information to Ms. Edwards. She is just phenomenal as our administrator, and then she can notify us when these things are occurring, and we'll continue to help you raise the profile. And with that, if you don't mind, we're going to move on, but what we're going to do is we're going to close the public hearing on HCR 23, and I will open a work session on HCR 23, and the chair will entertain a motion.
Thank you, Chair Matthews.
Thank you.
It is with thanks to Representative Springer and a glad heart that I move HCR 23 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Parrish moves HCR 23 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any discussion from the committee? Seeing none, clerk will call the roll, please. Ms. Craig.
Representative Booth?
Aye.
Representative
Aye.
Representative Huffman?
Aye.
Representative Wood?
Aye.
Vice Chair Fagan?
Aye.
Vice Chair Parrish?
Aye.
Chair Matthews?
Aye. And with that, the motion passes. HCR 23 is adopted. And we will assign, obviously, the good representative, Sherry Springer, to carry this for us. And thank you for bringing this forward. As you had mentioned in your testimony, this starts the conversation. Happy to be a part of it and happy to have this committee be a part of that as we move forward. Thank you so much, Representative Springer, and to all for the testimony. Thank you.
Thanks.
And we will move on to HJM 9. I will open a public hearing on HJM 9.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Joint Memorial 9 urges Congress to change the funding of veterans' health care from a discretionary entitlement to a permanent and direct entitlement. There's a no revenue impact and a no fiscal impact statement and no subsequent referral on this bill.
Thank you. And I see the good representative, Sal Escobar, coming. And Sal, would you like some folks to join you?
Yeah, sure, Mike. I'm leaving.
We're ganging up on you today.
Yeah, somebody sent a memo out to the Navy veterans and you decided to take over the building. No, that's great. Well, thank you for being here and look forward to your testimony. The floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Sal Escobar, Representative District 6. This is the second year we've run this out, second time we've run this particular memorial out. What it does, it urges Congress to quit underfunding our veterans through their discretionary funding and to put it into some stabilized funding to where they can count on a specific amount of money during every cycle instead of this up and down, up and down, up and down. I think it's very important because, as this committee well knows with me, if we're going to start a conflict and we're going to put people in harm's way, we need to take care of those people when they come home. And this was a perfect example of just what was prior here, of us as a nation doing things with our military and then not coming to their aid when they need it the most. So I hope that we can get this onto the floor and onto Congress.
Good afternoon, Chair Matthews and committee members. For the record, my name is Mike Sullivan. I'm the Oregon Political Director for the Association of Western Pulp and Paper Workers, commonly known as AWPPW. My background in the Navy was I served on two aircraft carriers, the USS Shangri-La, and I won't tell you what we called it, and the USS John F. Kennedy. That I spent 22 months at sea on the flight deck, and although we were never shot at, I assure you, with 95 airplanes on a flight deck of 300 yards, it's a trip. I want to thank this committee for the fine work along with the chair, but I'd like to give some background to this memorial. Actually, I hate to correct my fellow Navy veteran, Representative Escobar, but this started in 2005 when Representative Donna Nelson was the chair. And Donna Nelson really put a stamp on Veterans Affairs. The reason being is the Veterans Affairs Committee had not met for almost 50 years. The way I found that out was Irv Fletcher, the past president of the FL-CIO, who has an acute memory, relayed that to me. So I went up to the legislative library today, and which I might add is staffed by the Oregon State Library, and I had a staffer, Rob, look it up. And actually, it's a mere 42 years that veterans had met. 1963 was the last year before 2005. So to Donna Nelson's credit, she put in 156 bills involving veteran affairs. To the chagrin, because if I remember correctly, each bill dropped is about $1,000. So fellow committee members, Senator Brian Nelson and Dave Hunt, took the task of paring them down. But there was such a need. And Donna Nelson was so gracious that she began her meeting with asking all the veterans to stand up. And I believe, Representative Boone, you were on that committee. And then they would applaud the veterans. She also had a fine bottle up there that anyone that used acronyms, which I'm famous for, had to pay a quarter for each letter. What the representative said is exactly true. Right now it's discretionary spending, so it's an annual budget. And this is horrible on the administrators because they don't know how much money to project out for the medical people they need, the fine doctors and nurses that the VA have. And so if it was an established, mandated direct fund, they would have a better idea what the budget needs to be like. Now I'll take you up to the last session, 2011, after successfully going through this chamber, it was in the Senate Veterans Committee. And after I made my testimony, Vice Chair Mons Anderson asked me, have I heard anything from the federal government on this issue? And the reply I gave her was no, and it's no today. And so and to backtrack a bit, in 2003, I'd read an article in the Disabled American Veterans magazine, which I went to in 2005. I went to Donna Nelson and showed her this article, and that's where the draft originally came from. She sent it down to LC, and they came up with it. So in 2011, thinking of that, I wrote the director of the Department for the Disabled American Veterans and asked, and I gave the letter to the committee that you have before you. And he was like the federal government. He never responded to this letter. I'm asking you, Chair Williams, and I'm assuming that this memorial will go through this chamber and the next, that you and your counterpart in the Senate, Senator Boquist, author a letter to go with the filing of the Secretary of State, trying to put some effort behind this to get the federal government to move. As we saw the panel from the previous speeches, there has to be something done. If we ask the very best of our very youngest, the least they should have is the very best health care we can offer. And I'll answer any questions if there are any.
And I thank you for that, Mike. Had it not been for your diligence in working with the good representative and the two of you collaborating, we wouldn't have this before us. But it was on your radar coming into the session. I appreciate you bringing it to us. So thank you both. Any questions from the committee? Yes, Representative Parrish.
Representative Escal, thank you, first of all, for bringing this. Of course, I'm a fan of our Urge Congress bills because for the very reason that you just said, they go and sit on somebody's desk and be ignored. But I kind of wish I had the opportunity to meet Donna Nelson, being that I've heard many a story about her having a heart for this. And sometimes as legislators, we inherit things from other people who've been and served in this building, and I've managed to inherit a really beautiful brooch that was Donna Nelson's, as I understand it. So maybe we'll continue to keep pushing for those kind of things in this building and certainly support this. And I hope part of the funding piece is also that the VA gets the message that it's not just the money, it's how they use the money, and it's about speeding up the service for some of these folks who, frankly, it takes a long time to process through the VA. We are 13 months into retirement. Mark still is not finished with out-processing from the military and the VA in that process. And some people who may have not realized that they had an opportunity to go interact with the VA, some of them don't have 13 months to wait for that health care. So, again, thank you for bringing this forward.
Mr. Chair, Representative Parrish, there are so many concerns about the VA system that just makes your head throb. I know of an individual that was operated on by the VA, and he had an allergic reaction to the medicine that they were giving him, and his tongue swelled. Well, it took VA almost 4 months to get him to a specialist, and his tongue was swollen out of his mouth. Think about that, folks. And all they had to do was refer him to a specialist, but they were backlogged. And I guess right now we're backlogged to almost 1 million people that need benefits that were backlogged, and some as long as 2 years now. We can't do this. We can't do this to our veterans. We can't do this to our people here in the United States at all. So I urge your support.
Can I make one more comment?
Absolutely.
I sincerely want to thank Representative Esquivel, who's always been stark on this issue. In fact, this year he gave up his priority bill to make sure we got through. In the process, it got lost, if you will. And this is too important to be lost, and he definitely recognizes that. Thank you.
Very good, and thank you. And once again, for all your work you do on behalf of the veterans and for your service, each of you, thank you and welcome home.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else here to testify on HJM 9? Seeing nobody else testify on HJM 9, I will close the public hearing on HJM 9, and I will open a work session on HJM 9. And entertain a motion.
Chair Matthews, I move HJM 9 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Representative Fagan moves HJM 9 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion? Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, clerk will call the roll. Ms. Craig, please.
Representative Boone?
Aye.
Representative Esquivel?
Aye.
Representative Huffman?
Aye.
Representative Webb?
Aye.
Vice Chair Fagan?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Matthews? Aye. Motion passes. HJM 9 is adopted. And we will need to assign a carry for the measure. And I have a hunch that Representative Esquivel would like to carry that to the floor.
I'd be honored.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for all your work. Great. And with that, we will move to a public hearing on Senate Bill 461. Ms. Edwards.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 461 would designate a portion of Interstate 84 between the Idaho state line and its intersection with Interstate 5 in Portland as the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Highway. It requires the Department of Transportation to place and maintain markers along Interstate 84, designating the highway as the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Highway with funds provided by veterans groups. It would prohibit the use of public funds for the installation and maintenance of markers. There is a no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact and no subsequent referral.
Thank you. And I see we have some veterans that have self-deployed to the dais. Appreciate that. I'm going to assume that you are the four that were signed up, and I see some of my brothers from VFW 180 are here as well, coming in from Gresham. And I understand you had quite a trip yourself, sir. So,
well, just the rain.
Well, great. Well,
so I like it on the other side of the mountain.
If you will, you can start in any order you'd like. Please state your name for the record. And I'm assuming you're Mr. Steinberg, is that correct?
I am. I'm
Stuart. Wonderful.
I'm Stuart Allen Steinberg. I'm the co-chair of the committee in Vietnam Veterans of America, our state council that is behind us. Before I make my comments about SB 461, I want to say something about the issues that the atomic veterans brought up, just a brief remark. We, of course, faced the same problems about identifying our medical problems that were caused by our exposure to herbicides in Southeast Asia. It took many, many years. 2 weeks ago, there was testimony, I believe in the Senate, in front of the Veterans Affairs Committee by two former researchers with the Institute of Medicine. And they testified that the people doing the research on things like exposure to herbicides, Gulf War syndrome, and all of the other problems and that have come up during the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, as well as things like the atomic veterans, that the people doing this research were pressured to manipulate their data. And this is one of the major reasons why it took so long for these things to be recognized and for veterans to be able to be compensated. And I'm hoping that that Congress will do something about this, because as far as I am concerned, having been a service officer for the last 35 years, that this is criminal if it's true. Anyway, it continues to be a problem. As I said, my name is Stuart Allen Steinberg. I'm the co-chairman of the committee that seeks to have the bill before you become law and part of Oregon's great tradition of honoring its veterans. I served in the Army from 1966 to 71 and was in Vietnam for 18 months in 1968 through 1970. I volunteered to go and then volunteered to extend my tour. In this regard, I was no different than most of the men I was honored to serve with. I was an explosive ordnance disposal operator and was wounded twice. I have the Bronze Star with B device for heroism and a second Bronze Star and two Army Commendation Medals for meritorious achievement in combat. I went to college and law school on the GI Bill. Since 1978, I've been an accredited service officer for Vietnam Veterans of America, and over the past 35 years, I've assisted at least 2,000 of my fellow veterans, their widows and children, with their claims for benefits from the Department of Veterans Affairs. I'm proud to say that I am a co-founder of Central Oregon Outreach in Bend, which I'm sure Representative Huffman is familiar with, one of Oregon's premier nonprofit organizations that deliver comprehensive services to the homeless, disabled, and disadvantaged veterans of Central Oregon. In 2009 and 10, at the age of 62, I went to Afghanistan as an advisor with the UN Office on Drugs and Crime. We trained the Afghan border police in the conduct of counter-narcotics operations along the Iranian border. It was interesting that while I was there, I met several fellow Vietnam vets who, at our age, were continuing to serve their country. I'm asking that this bill be passed as a way to further honor those Oregonians who served in Vietnam, Thailand, Cambodia, and Laos. In fact, any veteran of the Vietnam War will know that they are being honored no matter what state he or she lives in if they travel down Interstate 84 in Oregon. Even though our closest held memories of our time in Southeast Asia concern the men we served with in close and often brutal quarters, we share a bond with all Vietnam veterans and often say, when we meet another one of us, welcome home. In fact, one of these gentlemen I met this morning said exactly that to me when we met. I do not have to go into detail about how often many of these men and women who served in the Vietnam theater were shabbily treated upon their return from what had become an unpopular war. That said, it is apparent that for the past 11 years, ever since we began to send our best young people to Afghanistan and 2 years later into Iraq, people have come to better understand what it means when a young person goes off to war in the name of the United States. As a result, Vietnam veterans have now been given their just due, from our very personal national memorial, the Wall, to the many state memorials like Oregon's own, to highways being named in our honor, and even to small town memorials like the one we have in Bend. Because of the war in Iraq and Afghanistan, the country now has a clearer picture of the impact of extreme combat trauma on many of our soldiers. Many of the men and women who served in Vietnam have, for years, been dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder and the murderous diseases many of us suffer and die from that were caused by exposure to herbicides. As a matter of fact, I just want to say that since the war ended, more than half of us have actually served in the Vietnam theater, 2.8 million, are dead. And the average age of a Vietnam veteran who dies is 64. In my community, the EOD community, because of all of the other things we were exposed to, chemicals, biological agents, even the toxic agents and plastic explosives that we used every day, the average age of a Vietnam EOD man who has passed away since the war ended is 59. It took us many years, too many from my perspective as a service officer, to be justly recognized for these problems. However, I think that one of the major issues that kept many of us from seeking help or from even admitting we were having problems has been solved by the country's newfound understanding of what it means to go to war, survive things very few have experienced, and then come home and return to civilian life. There is no question in my mind that recognition of our sacrifices by our fellow citizens In honoring those who served in Vietnam, Thailand, Cambodia, and Laos with remembrances such as the proposed Vietnam Veterans Memorial Highway helps those in need to further the process of coming all the way home. I thank you for the time and energy in making SB 461 the law of the state.
Thank you very much. We'll just go down the line, sir. State your name for the record, and again, thank you all for your service. Yes, sir.
Yes, I'm Ronald H. Morgan. I am the president for the Vietnam Veterans of America Oregon State Council, and I just wanted to add that the Vietnam Veterans of America is fully in support of this bill, and I appreciate the sentiment that goes with it. This is something that I think is long overdue, and I think that's about all I have to say. I think Stu pretty well summed it up for us. I'm going to pass the microphone on.
Thank you. And I see some friends from Gresham coming our way. So
yes, my name is Val Shaw. I'm the commander of VFW Post 180 in Gresham, Oregon. I'm a lifelong resident of the state of Oregon, except for summer camp that Uncle Sam sent me to back in 1966. I spent 2 years in Vietnam, 1967 to 1969. When I came home, a similar story. You know, we weren't treated well, but what most veterans did was, you know, put on their civilian clothes and we went to work. And, you know, I didn't lie to anybody, but I didn't tell them I was a Vietnam vet. Because back then we weren't treated very good. And one of the things that was brought up was Vietnam vets started the welcome home, because we weren't welcome home back then. And, you know, when it came to Afghanistan and the Iraq wars, we made sure that those veterans were treated well when they came back, because, you know, we weren't treated well. And to have this highway designated, it's a major route. And I mean, if you're going east or you're coming from the east, you come, most of 99% of the people come I-84. It goes through the most beautiful area in the state, the gorge. And you know, what a better way to honor Vietnam veterans, and what a better way to say welcome home, thank you for your service, and I thank you.
Hello, my name is Tyler Marriott. I'm a past commander of the post, past commander of the district, and past commander of the state for the VFW. My story is a story that revolves around 2002. As you know, as everyone has said, that you've heard the stories of how Vietnam veterans were treated. I think the Vietnam veteran is probably one of the most silent groups there have been, because of those feelings. The culture around that just generated this silence that we kind of felt compelled to be part of. In 2002, I was out looking at a motorcycle to buy, and I had a ball cap on that had a little tiny pin of a Vietnam medal on it. And I'm talking about this bike and da-da-da-da. And all of a sudden, this guy looks up at me, and he looks at my hat, and he goes, "Are you a Vietnam veteran?" Just flat, just like that. And I immediately stepped back out of arm's length, and I thought, well, what's this guy going to do? And I thought, well, no, this is John. I sing with John. He's not going to do something, is he? But then I leaned back just a little bit more, and I said, yeah. He goes, cool. I go, cool? Since when? I missed it. And then I suddenly realized that if it's cool now, that really is cool, because no longer will any veteran, I think, have to go through what we did. And to have this road designated in that way, to bring recognition to Vietnam veterans, it is such an incredible statement of Oregon to say thank you.
Thank you. And I, you know, I'd be remiss if I didn't just give Representative Huffman a chance to tell us about his involvement, because it was him and, of course, our Senator Lori Montes Anderson working together that brought this forward. So, Representative?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We were actually in this room having a joint hearing early in the session, and we were all kind of going down the line sharing what our veterans' priority bills were going to be for the session. And I happened to be able to go first. And Senator Montes Anderson was sitting down over there, and when I was talking about the bill to honor Vietnam veterans through the Memorial Highway, she just kind of... And so we chatted about it up here at the dais, and neither one of us were doing it for ourselves. We were doing it for you guys. And so we joined efforts and created one bill to both of us get behind and chief sponsor. And I really appreciate Stu's a part of the Central Oregon group, and I was down there for a meeting last year, and that's when I was approached about it. And I imagine it was very similar situation for the senator. There was a statewide effort going on, and we didn't know that we were each being approached, but more than thrilled to be able to bring this bill forward. Happy to do it. Appreciate Stu driving over, leaving sunny Central Oregon to come across the mountains. It's tough to do sometimes.
That meant giving up a day of being on my horse.
There is now. Yeah. Anyway, thank you, Mr. Chair.
You might have left sunny Central Oregon, but some folks left Gresham, which is really the metropolis of the state.
Yeah. Brother.
Any questions from the committee? Yes, Representative Escobar.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, but thank you for being here. And more importantly, I don't know how you felt, but I felt for a long time that I was never angry about the way I was treated. I was more or less sad for my fellow veterans that were in country. And I know that Senator Astle out of Maryland was a fighter pilot. And if you know him today, he's still a fighter pilot. When he got off, got back in the United States, somebody spit on him. And he's never forgotten that. And it's very difficult for him. And it's unfortunate when you have that. I don't know if you came into Travis or where you came into, but I came into Travis in San Francisco, which at that time wasn't a real neat place to be because of the protests of the war and that. But I hope that we convey to our people in the United States that if you don't like a war, don't take it out on the warrior. It's not like we decided we wanted to start a war for something to do. So I hope we've conveyed that, and I think we have with the Desert Storm and the Iraq and Afghan veterans, and I hope we continue on that path. But thank you for what you've done.
Thank you.
Any further questions, comments from the committee? And I also want to just extend, and forgive me, but to the VFW of 180 out there in Gresham, the post that covers, you know, a lot of the folks in East County, the Corbett area and whatnot, they do a remarkable job. If you have nowhere to go on a Veterans Day or Memorial Day, you can bet they're going to be spearheading an effort at the Heroes Memorial right there on Powell Street at Roberts. You're always invited to come join us out in Gresham. And thanks for the work you do in the community and all that you're doing for veterans and your just tireless efforts in the community. Thank you to the gentleman and to you all. You
should also come to Bend on Veterans Day. We have the second biggest parade in the state.
Wonderful. And with that, gentlemen, thank you for your testimony today, and our intent is to keep this thing moving forward. So thank you very much. Is there anybody else here to testify on Senate Bill 461? Seeing none, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 461, and I will open a work session on Senate Bill 461.
Chair Matthews, I move Senate Bill 461 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Parrish moves Senate Bill 461 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Any further discussion on the motion? Seeing none, clerk will call the roll, please. Ms. Craig.
Representative
Boone.
Aye. Representative Escobar.
Aye.
Representative Huffman.
Aye.
Representative Witt.
Aye.
Vice Chair Fagan.
Aye.
Vice Chair Parrish?
Aye.
Chair Matthews?
Aye. And the motion passes. And Representative Huffman, I imagine you would like to carry this to the floor, and we would appreciate you doing that for us.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, sir. Thanks for bringing it forward. And thanks to those who testified today, and thank you for your efforts and all your service. Thank you. Have safe travels. And we're now going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2891.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2891 directs the Oregon Department of Veteran Affairs and County Veteran Service Officers to assist Korean Vietnam War veterans and their spouses, dependents, or survivors in applying for benefits and aid related to health care coverage and services. It requires the ODVA and CVSOs to partner with the Oregon Health Authority to establish health care coverage programs and provision of and the provision of health care services to any Korean Vietnam War veteran who is not entitled to health care coverage. It would be effective upon passage.
Thank you very much. And Representative Parrish, thank you. You brought this bill forward, and the dais is yours.
Thank you, Chair Matthews, members of the committee. For the record, Julie Parrish, House District 37. And colleagues, we passed out of this committee already HCR 3, which urges Congress to urges Congress, my favorite, to give recognition to a small subset of soldiers who were Korean citizens at the time of their service in Vietnam, who served alongside of our men and women in uniform in that war, who have now come and become American citizens, and where there was kind of an intergovernmental agreement between South Korea, let's be clear, South Korea and the United States, that the South Korean soldiers who fought alongside American soldiers would be cared for. Their change in citizenship status to American soldiers put a small subset of those soldiers into a limbo status for the last 40 years. They've not been acknowledged or recognized by the United States Department of Veteran Affairs. And so while we are certainly hoping that Congress will fix something in this next session that they're working on, that in Oregon, for this small subset of people who we believe to be probably less than 40, more likely 15 or 20, and we just heard from the last panel about the rapid demise of our Vietnam-era soldiers, well, that's going to apply to these folks as well, regardless of where their citizenship was in that when they served our country. And so this bill is needs a little bit of a fix still. We're still trying to figure out who gets to house these folks, but essentially our goal is that when we gavel down and signy die for this session, that we go out and find these guys and make sure that they are connected to health care. Now, whether that's going to be from the Oregon Health Plan, whether that's going to be from PEB, my personal preference is that we put them into a PEB type plan and have ODVA shepherd them and make sure that they are cared for and well taken care of, since we've ignored them for the last 40 years. But we're still working out a couple nuts and bolts of the details. It's a small, hopefully minimal fiscal, small fiscal for this handful of people. It's the right thing to do, and I know that your hearts are all in doing the right thing. And so I don't have to sell this too hard here.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Any questions from the committee members? So my only question, because I know you've been, you know, entrenched in the issue, right now in the background it says approximately 45 Korean War Vietnam veterans currently reside in Oregon, but this bill would also apply to spouses or dependents. Is that correct?
I do not believe that to be applied to spouses and dependents. It's really supposed to be for the veterans, so that language is in there. Not that I don't want spouses and veteran children to be covered, but it's really designed to care for that service member who, like where my husband's VA benefit does not apply to me. I don't get to go to the VA and get health care.
Okay, I appreciate that. The staff measure summary that we have says it would assist the veterans or spouses, dependents, or survivors applying for and obtaining health care coverage.
We'll get that.
I know you're working with it, and we're going to hear from Cameron Smith, too, of ODVA, and we'll, you know, figure out where this goes. And Cameron, if you want to join, you can. And if you want to stay at the dais, it's great. If you want to come up here, that's your seat as well. Thank you, and thanks for joining us today.
Chair Matthews, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Cameron Smith, Director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. It blends on Senate days and House days, which where we've had testimony before. But we've had a lot of our citizens who are now Korean Americans who served in Vietnam alongside our forces testifying very passionately on this issue. And as I sit, as a newbie, as a new director this month, thinking through both the opportunities and challenges that we face for our veterans and military families, and then even sitting through the testimony today, just a lot of questions raising up for me in terms of, the ROC forces, the Republic of Korea forces, did send more folks than any other nation, kind of the many flags model that Lyndon Johnson had during Vietnam. There was Australians, New Zealanders, but the ROC forces were some of the largest numbers. And I had the honor of serving, the Marines have great relationships with the British Royal Marines and the ROC Marines, and we recognize that they have been a powerful ally then and today. And it kind of comes back to our longstanding conversation that we've had on this committee and in the legislature in terms of the recognition bills, like the highway bills, that are important but don't necessarily carry the fiscal impact. And then at the same time, hearing from the atomic veterans, the Vietnam veterans, same situations with the Gulf War veterans, and issues that are coming out today of Iraq and Afghanistan that we don't know that are going to be similar to these exposure issues and chemical issues, whether they're burn pits or other chemical exposures during war. I get nervous looking at, it's unsatisfying, I know, to send a memorial resolution to the feds saying, this should be a federal issue. Federal VA has identified other groups, most notably, I think, the Filipino scouts during World War II, but very small, isolated pockets, they have given recognition once those folks do become citizens of the U.S. that they did serve alongside our forces and deserve federal VA benefits. But I think I know this group is small, and I'm hesitant to argue with Representative Julie Parrish on any issue. But I do worry about that we could come up with healthcare plans at the state level for military sexual trauma, post-traumatic stress across many different generations. And I'm just very aware that we could triple the size of the ODVA budget and not begin to even be a drop in the bucket of that larger $140 billion that the federal government spends on veterans' benefits. And I think there is an important role of a check and balance, both with our county partners and the state at the ODVA, that we become better use our limited resources to become better advocates for these folks. But I don't know that it's always going to be us actually providing the service, whether it's Oregon Health Authority or managed through the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. And I think that applies across a lot of areas in terms of housing, education benefits, employment benefits. We need to crack the nut on more tangible benefits beyond the the recognition is important, and we need to crack the nut on the larger tangible issues. But I think it does set an interesting precedence that we need to think through carefully in terms of what roles do we want our state agencies playing and what is the appropriate balance with the feds in their wheelhouse.
Yeah, no, I can appreciate that, and I think that we all recognize that the bill needs some help. It's starting the conversation, which I think is warranted, and we have heard the testimony. We have folks in this building, Representative Parrish, one of them, championing this type of legislation for these veterans, so appreciate that. Any questions from the committee? And I guess we don't have any questions for you.
I'll just follow up, add one more piece to this. One of my criteria of how I kind of get to yes on a bill is, we had a bill recently that was kind of equally mixed. People on both sides of the aisle either did or didn't support, and it was around nurse practitioners. And my get to yes, for example, on something like that wasn't about give everybody military sexual trauma or whatever, give everybody that classification of a pay parity situation. My get to yes on that was a scarcity issue. It was about how do you look at, a scarcity or a situation where, but for the fact that there's a small amount of people and we need them to have a need met so that they can continue to, be served or meet the needs of others, is a get to yes. And for me, this bill is a like that. It is rather than a scarcity, we have a small, finite number who have a limited, scarce amount of time left. And so that's a criteria for me, and not about how do we set a precedent or kind of a scary precedent about, expanding and opening up the role to everybody. So as a consideration set for all of us, I would certainly put that forward, that we have a short timeline for anybody else to respond to this versus, and not to, I've got a very close friend who's been through military sexual trauma. She's in her 40s. She'll be dealing with that for life. How do we make sure that she is served through another venue? I'm going to continue to be a voice and an advocate for that. But this is about a scarcity of time. And so that, for me, as a criteria set in considering a bill like this and doing something kind of unprecedented, that I would hope that we would all bring that as a lens to this type of legislation.
Thank you for that.
Thanks.
And Cameron, congratulations, belated congratulations on your confirmation from the Senate for your position as director of the ODVA. I'm looking forward to working with you and think you're going to do great things.
Stuck with me, Chair Matthews.
Apparently so. It just shows I'm not very effective. No, just kidding. outstanding. So congratulations on that. Thank you both. And with that, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2891. And committee members, anything for the good of the order?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, sir. Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I continue to be very concerned that the U.S. government is in denial when it exposes our troops to fatal exposures. It was oftentimes Agent Orange in Vietnam. I had a cousin who died of liver cancer, leaving a wife and two very young boys, whose claim was never accepted until 3 years after he died. I've seen denials over depleted uranium and burning oil wells in the Gulf War. And I'm afraid, Mr. Chairman, that those veterans that did their duty in the Cold War and continued to do their duty decades later as civilians had the federal government hiding behind that cloak of secrecy.
Thank you for that, Representative Witt. And sorry about the loss of your friend. And thank you for sharing.
I would also say, Mr. Chairman, that we have members of this committee that continue to suffer from Agent Orange.
Yes, sir. This is true. Representative Parrish.
Thank you. Well, colleagues, I have a really fun bill up at 3 o'clock in the Land Use Committee that I really wish would have come here first, but it's in the Land Use Committee. If you go to OregonVeteransFoundation.org and check out their website, this is a land use situation where some folks might need a little bit of a nudge to find a way to get to yes on a 51-acre veterans complex right off I-5 north of Wilsonville. Splits a piece of my district with House District 26, a nonprofit group who wants to do housing, health care, increase the access on services by putting in a benefits office where people can go and have another outlet to find benefits, amphitheater, community sports center for not just veterans. So if you want to come and watch a fun hearing on land use siting for that particular project and others like that potentially, please join me in land use at 3 o'clock.
I wish you well. Anything else for the good of the order? I will just simply say, for those of you traveling home, have safe travels home on your extended weekend as you spend Friday in your district. And if you choose to celebrate the Easter holiday, then please do so safely with your family. I do appreciate the work that goes into helping our veterans and supporting our veterans and what we're doing as a committee, not just individually, but as a group collectively. To help be the voice for folks that don't come to us and ask us for anything. I think the good representative carried the bill the other day where he just said it best, and that was that the veterans don't come here asking for anything. It's what we're willing to do for them that matters most. And I appreciate what this committee is willing to do for its veterans. With that, thank you all for the day. Thanks for all your work and your commitment to our veterans, and we will adjourn the House Committee on Veterans and Emergency Preparedness. Thank you.